Why are young people drawn to Catholic tradition? What is the state of Catholicism in Europe? We'll talk to somebody today with insights into these questions today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, be sure to like and subscribe to the channel. Let other people know about it. We really appreciate when you do that. Also, you can follow us on all the different social media channels at Crisis Mag. And also be sure, if you can, to donate to Crisis Magazine. We'd really appreciate it. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Today, we have a great guest. It's Alexander Tschugiol. I tried. He's an Austrian Catholic and the founder of the St. Boniface Institute, which supports the fight for the traditional Catholic faith and to defend that faith whenever and wherever necessary. Thanks so much for coming on the program, Alexander.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Eric. I'm very pleased to be here.
So what I want to do first is I want to get a little bit of your background. I know that, so I the reason I had you on first is because you're one of the people in this new book called Ever Ancient, Ever New, Why Younger Generations Are Embracing Traditional Catholicism. It's from TAN Publishers. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for people to know about it. It's great. It's basically each chapter is a different person giving their own story. And you get chapter one, Alexander, and then some others like Timothy Gordon and Stephanie Gordon and Kenneth Alexander and some others are all featured in here. So why don't you tell us first a little bit about, I believe, if I'm correct, you're actually a convert to Catholicism.
Yes.
And also then to traditional Catholicism. Why don't you give a little bit of your story, how that all happened?
Yes. So basically, when I was young, I was I had this question phase everyone goes through, you know, where I didn't know really why we are on Earth, why the Earth is the way it is, and so on. And then I was, for 1 week, thinking that maybe the chaos theory is right, that everything going to emerge from chaos. But after 1 week, I found out that this somehow is stupid. As if everything emerged from chaos, then why don't we see chaos right now? When did the chaos stop and the order start and so on? So this is when I actually came to the conclusion that the things are not as they seem to be, especially looking at what I learned at school. My school was considered a quite good school, but in general, obviously very atheistic. And so I didn't really get any answers there, but I had quite some faithful friends. And so I started talking with them, and a few of them were faithful Catholics. And then we had this strange situation where I was sitting in my classroom, and I was a Protestant, a Lutheran, and my professor for Lutheran theology was, instead of the Catholics, we as Protestants think blah, 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 blah. So whatever he said, he always said, the Catholics say this, but we say this. And I found this is very strange. And as I really did not like his approach in general, I thought that it would be maybe a good idea to look a little bit more into the Catholic faith. I talked with my friends about this, who are Catholic, this time both of them are still Catholics and very faithful. And then called the parish, which was right next to our school and which was exactly the parish my Protestant teacher made always fun of because they were so Catholic. And so I went there, had a talk with the priest there, Oratorians of St. Philip, and the Oratorian priest there did a great job. And I asked all my questions. They answered all my questions. And at the end, Father Paul, he was in charge back then for this, and he was fantastic. At the end, it was clear that I will become a Catholic. He then gave me tons of books. I read through the books. I talked to my family. My family was very critical, but very accepting. They were very kind. My father and my mother said, well, if you think this is right, we'll support you, but we do not want you to get in or out of it. If you do it, then you really have to do it. I said, well, okay, perfect. I'll do that. And after my conversion...
How old were you at that point?
15.
Okay, right.
And after my conversion, I started to step-by-step discover the Catholic life. I started serving as an altar boy. One has to say that in my home parish, St. Rochus, in Vienna, the oratorians, there was no people's altar. There were no female altar servers. We heard communion in the mouth always. And so it was already considered quite conservative and traditional. And then my conversion priest, after when my first Jubilee year of conversion came, he said, do you want to do a traditional rite mass? And I said, well, yes. Unfortunately, he did not really explain to me how everything works, so it was a little bit boring for me. But for me, it was from the beginning something normal, you know. So I never considered it to be abnormal. I always thought, okay, well, that's also part of the church somehow. And then a few years later, not so many years later, actually, through the help of one very dear friend of mine, we're still very close to each other, I discovered traditional mass at the FSSP, the local FSSP parish here in Vienna, and it was wonderful. It was like the answers to all my questions was finally 100% there. Since my conversion, I already saw the answers, but then I saw them live, you know, which is a little bit different. So I was so happy about this. And this is how I became traditional. It took me then about 1.5 years to find out that traditional mass is really what I want always. So before that, I went to both. But then I found out that this is irgendwie somehow this is not it anymore. I don't want to talk badly about my old parish. They're a wonderful parish, but I have to say that the fullness of the faith is so clearly visible in the traditional Holy Mass, in the traditional way the sacrament, that the sacrifice is done on the altar, compared to the Novus Ordo, which is just not as clear. And I thought that if we honor God, why don't we honor him in the best way possible? And in my eyes, this is, as Roman Catholic, clearly the traditional Mass.
Now, one of the things that I was in a Novus Ordo parish for many years. I worked for a diocese. And one of the biggest challenges in the Catholic Church, at least here in America, and I think it's also true in Europe, is that we don't attract young men. In fact, I wrote an article for Crisis before I was the editor of Crisis years ago, and it was one of the most like popular articles ever at Crisis, which I was very shocked by. It was just, and I basically, it was called No Church for Young Men. And it was about the fact that young men seem to be very much not attracted to your typical Catholic parish. Yet, on the other hand, the traditional Latin Mass that I attend, after Mass, it's hilarious because we have all these young men hanging out afterwards because, you know, they all went to this Mass and they go there and things like that. And obviously you were a young man when you discovered it. Why do you think that the traditional Latin Mass seems to be so attractive to young men in particular, as opposed to what is normally celebrated at most Catholic parishes?
The Catholic faith is the most male faith in the world, and obviously also the most female faith in the world. So for both sides, it's the best faith in the world, obviously, yes? So the Catholic teaching is so clear and so wonderfully beautiful that as soon as you see it somewhere, and as soon as you understand it somehow, you already feel very attracted. So as a man, obviously, we see the modern world. We see the whole homosexual movement. We see the gender ideology. We see the whole this feminization, if you can say so, of male. And at the same time, by the way, the destruction of femininity with women. So we see this destruction. It's not very attractive. At the end of the day, we want to be challenged, actually. We want to actually be asked to fight for the good things. We want to do good things. So when I first came to traditional Mass, what struck me most was that there was no talking around the important things. Everything was clear. Also in the liturgy, especially the liturgy, it's no blah, blah. There is the it starts with a prayer, you know, at the altar stairs. And you fully understand everything is directed towards God. Everything is directed towards the sacrifice, towards God. In a Novus Ordo Mass, you always have this more or less struggle to find priests who are able not to put their own personality too much into the Mass. So in Novus Ordo Mass, we consider Novus Ordo Mass reverend when we see that the priest actually holds back as much as possible. And then we have to say, the problem comes up that every pious priest has obviously his own ideas of how his life of faith looks like. And then obviously it's like with little children, it's a little bit, okay, this sounds arrogant. I don't want it to sound arrogant, but get me right now. If you have little children who do not know something very well, and you give them, let's say, little stickers, you know, so little stickers, and then they stand next to, let's say, a Baroque cupboard, and they think, the Baroque cupboard is nice, and the stickers are nice, so I put the stickers on the cupboard. And we all would say, no, don't do this. It's a Baroque cupboard. The stickers would ruin it. So we see the same with faithful priests in the Novus Ordo Mass. They will then start adding beauty, what they consider beautiful, to the Mass because they see that there is something missing. And if you now go to traditional Mass and look at this, this is not at all the thing. It's 100% clear. The prayers are clear. The direction is clear. The serving is clear. The symbolic is clear. The way the priest stands is clear. Everything makes total sense. There's nothing there is a human problem, you know. It's God's liturgy. It's really to honor him. He is in the center. And this is so attractive. And all my friends, all my male friends especially, as soon as they understand that one part of the life is actually to fight for what is good, traditional Mass is the place to go.
Now, in America, the traditional Latin Mass has grown just exponentially. Now, it's still a small part. It's a small percentage of the total number of parishes. But over the past few years, especially after COVID, all the lockdowns, it's grown exponentially. We've seen this all over America. In fact, America is kind of known as one of the bastions of the traditional Latin Mass. What is the state of the traditional Latin Mass in Europe? As far as obviously you're in Austria, my understanding is that it's pretty popular in France, but not necessarily in other places. But is it growing across Europe? Is it still a very small segment? What is the status of it over there in Europe?
Well, the easy answer is when I converted and I traveled through Europe, finding traditional Latin masses, as I said, back then I was not yet like this, but some of my friends were already, was really difficult. Now it's not difficult anymore. So yes, it's definitely growing. The only difference is that in Europe, everything grows more silent than in the United States, because in Europe, the things are, first of all, we have way more the mainstream media, also in the Catholic sense, is way more institutionalized in a way that it's way more difficult to go around them. Whereas in the United States, you have this idea that if something is good, and there is no institution yet, and you just found an institution, that's it, and then you go for it, and then people donate to it, and it works, and it's wonderful. That's the reason why we all like the United States so much. But here in Europe, after socialism, you know, you just don't forget, here in Vienna, in Austria and in Germany, we had Hitler, we had National Socialism. So National Socialism went through all the schools, all the people in school learned that socialism is good and that the state should be in charge of everything. Then we had soft communism after this and socialism after this as well, telling us all the time that everything has to be according to how the government wants it. So right now, the main problem here is that people are not courageous enough, or maybe they are courageous enough, but they don't think it's wise yet to talk about it in the same way as we would talk about it in the United States. And second of all, we have a different structure of dioceses here than we have in the United States, as we have all our historical dioceses, which are quite old. So, you know, we have this thing that we have very little small dioceses sometimes old ones, new ones, one where you have a small country, but you always had a cardinal, other ones where you have a big country, but not a cardinal, and things like this. And that makes it also a little bit more difficult to navigate through this authorities. But at the end of the day, the traditional Latin Mass communities are growing and growing and growing. Up until Traditionis Custodes, in a very beautiful way, since Traditionis Custodes, in a more hidden way, but they are still growing.
Yeah, what you're saying is in America, we can't shut up.
No, it's wonderful. It's good.
It's the culture is very different.
It's one of the advantages.
Now, so in Austria itself, then, where you are, you're in Vienna, is that correct?
Yes, I'm in Vienna.
Okay. So like how many, is there just the fraternity parish that celebrates the traditional Latin Mass, or are there other parishes in Vienna?
So before Traditionis Custodes, we had, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, more than 11 Masses in Vienna, traditional every Sunday. Now we have 2.
That's very unfortunate. Who's the Bishop of Vienna?
The Diocese of Vienna is bigger than the city of Vienna, you have to know.
Right.
And unfortunately, the cardinal closed everything except 2 FSSP parishes, one inside Vienna, one outside, and one more or less, it's not a diocese, it's by the Oratorians, actually. These are the only Masses which now exist.
Yeah, actually, I go to Oratorian parish myself, and they're just wonderful.
Yeah.
So what happened to all the people who were attending the other 9 traditional Latin Masses? Are they mostly congregating to those 2 parishes, or are they just kind of left? Are they too far away? I mean, how does that work there?
Well, Vienna is obviously an old city, so everything is quite close to each other. So no, nobody's too far away. They go to the other Masses, obviously, but some of them now go to SSPX. Some of them do not go to those Masses anymore at all. And what the main problem is, it really destroyed the communities, you know, because some of those communities were actually pretty old already. Not necessarily huge, because, for example, we had this one parish priest in Vienna. He's a wonderful man, a little bit unusual the way he does things. And his traditional mass was already since 2013. And it was now closed with about 80 to 100 people going to every Sunday. Yeah. And that's really outside of the city. That's not in the city center. So those people have it very difficult now to attend the other traditional masses. So yes, there are those problems. But as you know, whenever modernist people tell us that they do something for pastoral reasons, it's mostly for not very pastoral reasons. And so the same we saw here. So the Traditions Custodes was used as an instrument to destroy good working Catholic communities with lots of young people, with a good rate of conversions, a very, very good rate of baptism, of confirmation, of priestly vocations, of marriages, and so on. And so at the end of the day, all those marriages do still exist. The vocations all do still exist. The baptized people are all still baptized, and so on. So if they think that through this nonsense instrument they will keep us from living a traditional Catholic life, then obviously they are wrong. What we have to say is that unfortunately this made it a little bit more difficult to organize traditional masses. So when I, for example, went to any church and said, well, can we do a traditional mass there? This was never a problem in Vienna. Now it is a problem. Now we have to go to other dioceses of Austria and organize them there because some other dioceses are not as strict as the Diocese of Vienna.
So we were fortunate in America, so to speak, when it came to Traditio Custodes, and that most dioceses here, most bishops, basically did nothing. They maybe put out a statement, but they did very little. There have been a few dioceses, definitely like Chicago, and then most recently St. Augustine and some others that have cracked down more. But generally, like, for example, you know, in most dioceses, the bishop was just like, I will just leave you guys alone. What was the case outside of Vienna? Because Vienna sounds like it was pretty bad, the reaction. But how did most bishops around Europe react? Did they mostly act as Vienna did and crack down more so than they did in America?
This, I cannot give you a generalized answer. I can only talk for the German-speaking area. In the German-speaking area, obviously, the Germans went pretty harsh on the traditionals, but they already did before. So, interestingly, the traditional communities in Germany all still exist because they were already used to this kind of handling the diocese had with them. But in other, obviously, in France, there were a few very famous dioceses which shut down traditional mass, in Italy as well. In general, I can still travel through Europe and I can still go to traditional mass everywhere. But yes, it was very hard in some areas. It cannot be generalized because it's really a bishop thing right now. And all the leftist bishops did this and all the mainstream bishops normally did not do anything. And the good bishops normally supported the traditional mass now more than they did before.
Right. Now, what do you what would you speculate is the future of Traditionis Custodis and Traditional Latin Mass, because it seemed like for a while Pope Francis kind of paused and there was a, after Archbishop Roche had his the dubia responses back in December, there was a big pushback against that and it seemed like nothing happened. They kind of paused, they let the FSSP go. Now there seems to be some more talks and more ramping up. What do you think like the next couple of years holds for the Traditional Latin Mass communities?
Well, they will grow, obviously. But besides that, if you talk more or less about the, I don't like the term, but about the church political point of view, then one could say that there seems to be the plan to destroy every traditional community except one or two. Let's say, for example, FSSP or maybe Institute of Christ the King, I don't know. And then obviously go after them in the second step. This is a plan which is talked about quite often by at least more the liberal bishops. In general, I have to say that as the traditional communities have so much youth coming, you know, so many vocations, it's kind of impossible to destroy them in general. And I think that in the next years, the political crisis of the world, so, the you know, you already mentioned war in Ukraine right now, but after 2 years of Corona terror, you know, we all know that things can happen. They are so huge that I think having underground Catholic communities might be a thing in general, needed in general. And those communities will be mostly traditional at the beginning, I'm very sure. And then I think the rest will follow and also follow into tradition in my eyes. So in general, I think that the more we as Catholics have to suffer, and the more the church has to suffer, and the more the people, that the citizens of our countries have to suffer, the more the traditional answer will be what they all will look for, as it is so clear, so helpful, and the only thing which actually carries you and strengthens you in those times of need.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think as the culture becomes more and more anti-Catholic, there's a need among Catholics to distinguish themselves more clearly with the culture. And that is definitely something the traditional Latin Mass does. It's so different. It's so countercultural just by its essence that it is something that kind of stands, like you said, the persecution, the suffering.
Yeah, if I might, I'm sorry, I'm terribly sorry about this, but if I might correct you on one thing, it is not countercultural, it is cultural. And what they do is countercultural. And that's the reason why you see it. We really have to understand that the traditional Latin Mass is nothing new. Also, if it develops, you know, if, for example, Pope Leo XIII added the Leonine prayers after the Mass, you know, and those things come, and then maybe you have one prayer added at this Mass and one prayer added at this Mass. At the end, the traditional Latin Mass is the oldest sacrifice on earth, because it's sacrifice which is God's sacrifice itself, and which was already, on the liturgical sense, prepared by sacrificing the temple of the Jews, you know. So you see that this is one big thing. They will never destroy it. It's impossible. So what will happen is they will persecute us. And as you know, when Christians get persecuted, they normally grow in strength. And you see this right now here. So I'm very happy to say that actually, I'm not happy to say that the crisis happens, because it's not good for many people, and many people totally lose their sanity. But it's every crisis shows clearly what is true and what is a lie. And the truth is definitely, definitely God. And so if God tells us, you only come to the Father through Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ tells you have to get baptized, and Jesus Christ tells the apostles, you have to hear the confession, and this is how you do the Mass and so on, then this is so extraordinary, bigger than everything that the others do, that the only thing they can do is they can come after us physically. So I think that the traditional Catholic faith is the best antidote to the physical and also more or less psychological war they lead against the humanity. And therefore it will survive, because it's the antidote. So people will be way more healthy with it than without it. So that's the calculation at the end of the day. I don't like to calculate those things, but at the end it could be a calculation.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point you make, though, that our culture, the popular culture today, is really an anti-culture. It's not a real culture. It's a culture of lies. Yeah. So, now let's just shift a little bit. I want to keep talking about Europe in general and the state of the church and kind of state in here in America. When we look over at Europe, I mean, I don't know about other people, but most people I know, we have a very low opinion, frankly, of the Catholic Church in general in Europe, because we hear about the German bishops, for example. We hear about all these other, you know, frankly, some of the French bishops and the English bishops. I mean, our bishops are not an impressive lot either at times, but they just seem to be just going even further, especially in Germany. How can you explain, let's focus on Germany for a second.
Yeah.
How can you explain the fact that the German bishops are literally and outwardly pushing heresy and trying to get the church to change its teaching on perennial teachings that she can't change?
Yeah. Well, there are tons of reasons for this, but I want to, first of all, make a huge, I want to stand up for the good Catholics in Germany. There are tons of them, and they do not do what the bishops do. So if you ever think that Germany is totally lost when it comes to the faith, that's definitely not the case. We have lots of vacation. The biggest traditional priestly seminary of Europe is in Germany. It's the FSSP seminary, and so it's good. But let's talk about the problem. So the bishops in Germany, I don't know if you're aware of that, are officially paid by the government, which explains more or less already half of it. Yeah. So the problem is that there is, I'm a Catholic, you know, so I do not think that there is a separation between faith and politics. But yes, obviously, there must be a separation between the church's hierarchy and the government's hierarchy. And this separation has to be as big as possible. It has to be bigger according to how big the difference between the stand of the government towards the Catholic teaching is. And therefore, this government, right now the German government, should be so far away from the Catholic teaching that the bishops should be as well, but they are paid by the government. through taxes, which were introduced by Adolf Hitler in order to create such a system of dependence on the state.
So I mean, just make sure it's clear. So if I think I understand this a little bit, but I want to make sure it's clear. So if I'm a Catholic and I'm living in Germany and I'm a baptized Catholic and everything, then when I pay my taxes, I mark that I'm a Catholic, correct? And so then that money is then funneled through the government, and some of that is then used to then pay the bishops, and that's how the bishops get their funding. So so now do I also tithe like on Sundays and give money that goes directly to the bishops or and the church, or is it just go basically mostly funneled through the government?
No, as you can as so the, you have to in Germany it's still as Austria and Germany have this it was introduced both by Adolf Hitler, but Austria has a nicer system than the Germans. In Germany, if you pay taxes and you're officially a Catholic, then automatically you have to pay a church tax. The church tax is then goes officially through the governmental structure, but goes directly to the church. And the church pays the bishops and certain other things with it. Obviously, Caritas and all the good things, obviously, not only bad things, but the system is not good. And whatever you contribute in your privately, so if you go give Sunday something, you know, when they go around and collect, and at the collect, you can also give money there. And then this normally goes to the parish, or often also to the diocese, depending on what you want. So yes, this is the system, and this makes the bishops gives the bishop a strange standing, obviously, as the bishops in Germany are more or less a political arm of the German government, and this is also the reason why you see them doing so many bad things. And the more traditional and more Catholic an area is, the higher is the chance that you will find a good bishop there. So, for example, if you go to Cologne, you have Kardinal Wölki, who is known to be, let's say, not as leftist as the other ones. He is unfortunately still part of the synodal way, but he is opposing it. I don't understand why he's part of it. He can just exit the synodal way, and I would like to clearly ask him also to exit, because many Catholics want him to exit. And or you look at Bavaria, where you have the terrible Cardinal Marx in Munich, but then you have two other dioceses, the Diocese of Regensburg and the Diocese of Passau, both very traditional Catholic dioceses, where the bishops are actually really good and fight against the synodal path. And nobody really talks about them in the international sphere. So yes, there is still a counter fight against this, but it's very difficult to do this if you're intertwined with the current system. And then secondly, the problem is that the theological and especially philosophical formation in the seminaries in Germany, it was obviously like in South America, you know, in South America, when the liberation theology came, all the new priests were all communists, more or less. And the same happened in Germany. Germany has a very Protestant theology at the universities, at some of the seminaries and in all of the universities, except maybe one or two. And therefore, it is nearly impossible to get a good formation there. See, if you talk to good cardinals, you know that, for example, Cardinal Müller actually did quite some good work recently. If you read his old books are completely leftist theology. But he's a wonderful man. He's faithful. So as he is faithful and as he knows that Christ is really the Lord and that the Holy Communion is really, that Christ is really present there and so on, as he knows all those things, they pull him away from the synodal path, from the heresies. And so now Kardinal Müller is fighting against the synodal path. Or Kardinal Brandmüller is very old already, but he's a professor. I don't know if you know him, a historian, a wonderful church historian especially, and also tons of other things. And he's also a very strong opponent of the synodal path. And he's a German cardinal, you know. So you see that there are good people fighting against it. It's just, if they do not have their own ways of formation, like Kardinal Brandmüller, who is so old already that he already still got the old formation, or Kardinal Müller, who is in touch with so many other people that he's found, that he read so many books and he just saw it in his pastoral work, then it's actually really difficult to get a clear point of view of the Catholic faith. All those bishops act as if they would be state clerks. Look at their personal and private life. Right. They do not have anything to do with the people, with the faithful, you know. They have only to do with a sort of governmental-like structure in the dioceses, which are 100% leftist and which get their orders more or less directly from the different leftist think tanks that exist in Germany. That's the problem. But yes, you will see that this will all end because the German, those Catholics do not have any youth.
Right.
Nothing. they already struggle to find new people. And now, obviously, they say, no, it's now needed. We need to open it for the women, for priesthood and so on, which is not possible. It's just not possible. So even if they say, I will now consecrate the women, she will not be priest afterwards, which is terrible still and a huge confusion and will cause many problems, but it will not change what God created. So therefore, this will end.
Now, so basically are the vocations, I'm assuming they're not getting any vocations. Are all the vocations basically going to the traditional orders at this point, or at least most of them in Germany and Austria?
So there are two big groups where they get vocations still. That's the traditionals, obviously. They are full. They have tons of vocations. And then the neocon ones, also the more charismatic ones, because even though they do not have a very strong teaching, they are normally very clear in the main question. So if you would ask a charismatic Catholic, what do you think about abortion? He would tell you, no, it's bad. If you would ask him, what do you think about confession? He says, it's very important. Holy Mass is for them also very important. Praying the Rosary is very important and all those things. So they are still Catholic in a way. The problem is just that they are confused and mixed up with a kind of Protestant theology, which ends up having huge problems in those communities. And they are a little bit organized like Protestant sects, you know. So they have a community popping up. There's this one charismatic leader figure, and then he stops being the leader, and then the community falls apart. So it's not very stable. So at the end of the day, lots of those charismatics turn traditional as well. So right now, we have, for example, in our FSSP community, where I normally go to Mass here in Vienna, the church is really full. And lots of the people who are there, young people, tons of young people there. Everyone, if you talk to them, some of them come from the charismatic part of the church, some of them come from the neocon part of the church, some of them come from destroyed parishes, some of them are converts. So you have them coming from everywhere, and the tradition is just holding them together. As the Catholic traditional Mass is not a hobby. It's not our style. It's the Catholic Church being represented and presented in a way that is so beautiful that people are very much drawn to it as soon as they overcome the judgments. You know, some of them have wrong judgments about this because they heard, yeah, well, the traditionalists are all the crazy guys. But we are not crazy. Go there. You will find tons of families with little children there. They are not crazy. They are very normal.
Very now, happy. So how would you, if you had to predict in the next 20 years how the church in Germany, particularly, how it's going to develop and evolve based upon what's happening now, what would you say is going to probably be the likely scenario over the next 20, 30 years in Germany?
Well, clearly the numbers of Catholics will shrink. Will shrink quite a lot. They will shrink. They will never shrink they will never totally to go away. That's impossible because right now we have all those young communities growing and they are very strong in faith. They will shrink. You will see having tons of women in charge of important positions for quite a time because as long as they have money, they will be able to pay lots of people, and the Catholic Church in Germany is very rich. So the diocese of Munich and Cologne and so on, they really have, I think, even billions of euros, if I'm not wrong. And they are really, really wealthy. And so at the end of the day, they will continue their work for quite a lot of time, if not God decides that he will now end this in other ways. I don't know. So, but this is realistic. At the same time, you will see traditional communities growing. Some bishops will definitely fight more against them. Some bishops will... them. So you will have the secret communities in one diocese and the public and very good working communities in the other dioceses. At the end of the day, this will just outlive modernism. And if the political crisis continues in the way it does, then you don't have to wait 20 or 30 years, but then you can wait 10 years maybe, or 5 years even, because with the stronger the political crisis, the more people are drawn to the faith, actually. Right now, if our bishops in Austria would do their job better than they unfortunately do, they could go around and be missionaries right now and send their priests out to mission to do a mission among the Austrian people. The Austrian people are so highly confused and so highly irritated by what's going on in the political sphere. The Catholic Church, with its the oldest answer in the world, you know, to all questions, is actually very attractive.
Now, here in America, we you know, with with COVID and the COVID regime, that all the lockdowns and everything like that, we saw it was a real revelation of a lot of things. Like, people kind of revealed who they were and what they stood for. And the churches, we saw that too, where people, there's been a big shift here of people going, like I said, the traditional parishes have actually grown tremendously after the COVID lockdowns, not simply because of the external, they weren't as strict on the rules about COVID rules, but more because, I think, because it revealed that they put souls first. Souls were more important bodies. They were the ones willing to go into hospitals. They were willing to risk themselves for souls. Now, did something similar happen in Europe? Like, I know a lot of countries there had massive COVID lockdowns as well. Was that a similar thing that happened there?
100%, 100%, everywhere. It was such a growth in trust. People suddenly saw that the traditional priests, because, you know, there's this saying that the traditional priests only go there because it's more fancy to be a traditional priest and you have nicer clothes. But that's really not the case, especially not in Austria, by the way, where all the novels, other priests often wear very nice baroque clothes. So that's not a thing here. No, definitely, 100%. I'm very happy to say that also my community, the priests, did really good work. I also, in my family, I had two of my grandfathers. Both my grandfathers died in the last year, and even though one of them was not Catholic, and the other one was also not. He left the church, and he entered the church again through the help of a very good traditional priest. And the other grandfather, we don't know, because he was already so that he couldn't talk about it anymore. But we say yes and no, and ask by a traditional priest, by the way, if he wants to be with God or with Jesus, if he dies now, he at least said yes. It was the most beautiful moment I've ever seen in the life of my grandfather. So at the end of the day, I don't know if this would work at the end, because God will give him possibilities, and if he takes them or not, it was his decision back then. But those priests came and they helped. And I was not at all the only one. All my friends had similar situations, friends and others, and this was really good for those communities. Obviously, it was also bad for other communities, because there are tons of people died without receiving sacraments.
Now, if I remember correctly, Austria had some pretty strict COVID rules. My daughters actually visited Austria in November, and I'll just say they had to get in and out, and it was a little bit dicey there. So, what were Catholics doing to kind of resist the COVID regime that was happening in Austria, and still is probably
beautiful? Yeah, still is. The most beautiful reaction you can think of. We had an emerge of rosary rallies in Austria, which now happen every Wednesday today. So after our interview, I will go into our office and I will prepare myself for today's rosary rally. Because we started this 2 years ago on the 13th of March, 13th of May, 2020, and since then every second week, and now every week we pray the rosary together. It's in more than 450 places in all of Austria. Tons of priests involved, tons of faithful involved. Every Wednesday since now 2 years, and it's growing.
That's amazing. We did an article at Crisis about that, actually, now that I think about it, a couple of months ago. So basically. This just started up in right after COVID started, so May of 2020, and every Wednesday now. And how many different places in Austria does this happen?
More than 450 places. I think it's already more than 500 places where it happened, but regularly it still happens in more than 400 places.
And what exactly do you do?
You meet at 6 or 7 p.m. depending on which time you agreed on, and you meet, then we talk about if there are certain things we should pray for, especially in regards of our country and of huge things like pro-life cause and whatever, then you just pray a rosary together.
Amazing. It's really inspiring. It shows how evil God brings good out of evil.
Yeah. If you go to the Twitter channel of St. Boniface Institute, obviously I've always telling people to follow this channel. It's not the most interesting channel, the first view, as we do not bring breaking news normally, but you will see that we post videos of those processions regularly. And if you look through those videos, you will see, you obviously do not see very little children, because at this time they are normally at home with their family, but you will see students, you will see people coming from work. You will see elderly people. You will see sometimes lots of priests, sometimes no priests, depending on the day, you know, and whatever happened. And normally in the winter time, and we had really lots of people coming there. And at the end, we had more than 600 people at one of the processions. Just an every week procession, just imagine this. And now, obviously, in the summertime, people do not come as often anymore, as they now have different, you know, if it's now we are allowed to go in restaurants again, which was not possible for us up until a few weeks ago. If you're not vaccinated, you were not allowed to go in any restaurant in Austria for quite a long time. And so all those people now do this more. And so now we do not have the same numbers anymore. But that doesn't matter too much for me. It's just about praying is good. We all know that if we don't live a personal life of prayer, that we will not make it into heaven, because this is what is needed. And you have to say the same thing about our society in general, about the people in general. Also, the society has to pray together. That's very important. Holy Mass, as you know, on Sunday, the church gave us the obligation to go there, but we can and also should, if possible, go more often than on Sunday. Then you will see that the church wants the people to go there, to gather in prayer during the Holy Mass, for example. So the church asks us to do things also together, also in public. The church asks us to do processions. The church wants us to erect crosses, statues of Our Lady, statues of different saints and so on, to remind the people. And the public prayer is nothing else than this. People often criticized this at the beginning and said, well, you only want to show off your faith. It's an interesting way of putting it, because more than half of the processions we did were done during lockdowns. So during going on the street was always connected with having a bunch of police cars following you and then screaming at you or trying to find you for this. I don't see how this would be good for my reputation. So at the end of the day, we did it for the prayer. You know, it's praying together is so powerful. And we now did a meeting of all those people who always came to our rosary processions. When the restaurants opened again, we went to a restaurant where they were always very good and they were also doing the lockdowns, they were very kind and did not do the same thing as others. And we expected 40 people at this meeting, and then 90 people showed up. And we talked to each of them, all my team, with the different families and so on. And what they told us were terrible stories. And they all told us how the prayer changed it into a beautiful story very often. And so I'm 100% convinced that this is the right answer to this crisis.
Was it illegal to do these at first because of the lockdowns?
That's a question. So according to Austrian law, no. Because in Austria, the Catholic faith is exempt from nearly everything, because it was for our former state religion. So there is a difference. We have lots of contracts with the government, the church. There was this fight going on because the dioceses followed the Austrian law. And so the question was, can the diocese forbid me to privately organize a rosary rally or not? At the end of the day, they did not forbid it for us at all, not at all. And we were once challenged, we were once fined, and we challenged this and we won. So even though our constitution was broken quite often in the last 2 years, they did not break this part of it yet.
Who started these rosary rallies?
Our team, St. Boniface Institute.
The Boniface Institute. Okay, great. Let's segue into that then. So you founded the St. Boniface Institute, what was that, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, so the pre-organization to it was founded 3.5 years ago. And the St. Boniface Institute itself was founded November, December 2019.
Okay. So what exactly is the purpose then? I mean, I kind of gave the one line before, but what is exactly the purpose of the St. Boniface Institute?
Well, that's now the most interesting question, obviously, because people always expect me to give a one-line answer, like, we organize conferences, you know, or something like this. But I have to say that that our approach is a little bit different. Our approach is that the Catholic faith is so important that everything should be ordered towards God. So whatever you do, God should be the first reason for you to do it. So if you drink a glass of water, like I do all the time, I should not drink it in order to say, because I want a glass of water, but in order to keep my body healthy. Why? Because I want to fulfill the tasks God gives me in order to honor God. If I build a street, I build it so that priests can bring the sacraments to the sick and that I can go to Holy Mass and so on. Secondly, to visit my family. Third, to fulfill my duties in my work and so on, which is also part of my godly vocation. So at the end of the day, if we order everything towards God, then everything becomes quite clear and why you do things and how you do things and so on. So St. Boniface Institute wants to help people to get a deep understanding of this by connecting good priests, good bishops with faithful, by promoting certain books, promoting certain prayers, certain devotions, and so on, obviously, as every Catholic organization, I think, does. And also, and that's the more extraordinary part, maybe, by doing a little bit of kind of think tank-like work. So what we do is we watch political developments very closely and try to find out what to do with them out of Catholic point of view. So for example, easiest example, vaccination and abortion. Very easy. There are tons of Catholic questions coming up with the forced vaccination, even though, even for example, the Catholic Church, in its note about the vaccines, even said that there cannot be such a thing as a forced vaccination. But obviously, there are other problematic points with this new note, but still, this was very clear. You have those different topics to go through. And the problem is that I saw if people are in touch with all those different issues every day, even though it's not their job. So, for example, they have an everyday job as a, let's say, bus driver, working in a factory, working in a lawyer, as a lawyer, working as a doctor, whatever, you know, then those people are way more easily confused by it and follow certain theories way quicker than they should. And I see this very clearly with the corona thing. People started to panic immediately. And panic is not our answer. Our answer is we trust God, and God will lead us, and God led us actually through this crisis in a very beautiful way. And therefore, we try to find out what can we do right now. So we found out promoting this prayer is very important. We found out connecting people to priests, as you said before, which still handed out the sacraments even during the lockdown. This was very important. Bringing people together with good doctors, physicians, which do not force you to get vaccinated, which actually take care of you, was very important. Bringing them together with good Catholic lawyers and so on. So this kind of work we do. So more or less, we screen the political landscape in order to find out whatever we are able to find out. Obviously, we have limited resources, and we are trying to find out as much as possible about how this affects the Catholics and also the others. Obviously, we always think for the whole society, but the people we're in contact with are Catholics mostly. And then we try to do different kind of work. So one of them is we work on press releases and articles and so on, and send them then to different media outlets in Europe mostly, but also a little bit in the United States, where we tell them, well, by the way, this happened. This is a statement by us. If you want to use it, you can use it. Here are our sources. You can research it yourself, but do something with it. And normally this is very accepted, so we can influence without doing it in a wrong way. We can influence the public discussion by stating certain Catholic truths. So we normally look into the catechism and or into a certain papal letters and encyclicals and so on, and try to find out answers. And this normally works out very well. And if we do not find an answer, we ask good priests and good bishops and good cardinals. Cardinals are bishops, I know, but we ask them to help us with this. So at the end of the day, this is what our work looks like. And so it's difficult to put my finger on it and say, that's St. Boniface Institute's work, because at the end of the day, it does not really matter if we do it or someone else does it. It's the question is, if we can contribute something which is good and helps people to find God and to and defends the faith in public, especially all the Catholic traditions, and obviously we are a traditional institute, then we try to do it. If we find out someone else does it better, then we support someone else. That's very easy. So if someone, so for example, we could never fulfill any task a priest should fulfill. So we try to stay in contact with as many priests as possible. And if a faithful asks for a priest, we can say, yeah, go there. So that we do not create these strange parallel structures where you suddenly think you are actually the better priest, you're actually the better physician, you're actually the better lawyer. No, we are not.
Right.
But we can recognize this, you know? So this is always our approach.
Now, of course, you're doing the rosary rallies are happening. Are there any other events, conferences, things that are coming up in the next coming months that you guys are planning?
Mm-hmm. So we did a conference in February, which was quite difficult because according to Austrian law, it was not, I don't want to say anything wrong on camera right now, but it was not clear if the way we did was the way the Austrian law wanted us to do it. Let's put it that way. But we had a conference and a ball after the conference, a very beautiful ball where we gave people the possibility to meet others, other young Catholics. At the conference, we talked about the different issues and we tried to bring together good people and also to create some policy papers and strategy papers in order to hand them over to people who are interested in the Catholic position on a certain fight. Now, upcoming, we do not have any bigger events because in the summertime, it's kind of impossible to plan anything in Austria. People are all gone. So what we do is right now we are working on a campaign against the so-called month of Pride. So we have in June, it's the so-called Pride month, so LGBT flags everywhere. It's terrible. And so we do a campaign against this, which is very difficult following Austrian law because the discrimination laws are so heavy already that you can go actually into prison quite already for criticizing this ideology in the wrong way. So we criticize it in the best possible way and at the same time highlighting the Catholic teaching on family and so on. This sounds a little bit boring, but this is connected with very active work. So we do meetings, we do two speeches by very good priests, one speech by not priest, we do lots of interviews, lots of media work and so on. So at the end of the day, you will not necessarily find St. Boniface Institute as a name often in media, but you will find tons of articles which are influenced by our work. And this is how we want to work, because I think that the European Union and the United Nations, but especially the European Union here in Europe, are really going after us. We will not have free speech in anything anymore in the future. We are now about to implement the first social credit systems here in Europe. You know, Bologna started, Vienna will follow in autumn. We already have this. We now have a censorship law which tells us not to spread certain media anymore, or we get fined up to €50,000. And the medias on the list are defined not by our government, but by the European Union. We have a new law coming out which tells us that encryption in private messaging will be illegal towards the government. So the government will then be able to look inside everything you write on your phone, everything to everybody. It doesn't matter if it's a priest, a doctor, a lawyer, your own wife, and so on. So this will be really ugly. And at the end of the day, the only thing we can do to combat this is to strengthen a Catholic society. We do not invent the Catholic society. God creates the Catholic society by calling people, by giving them their vocation, and through baptism and through receiving of the sacraments and through staying with him, Catholic society is more or less automatically created. We have to recognize it. So we do not want to create parallel structures. We recognize working and good structures. That's a different approach. So we do not say the government is corrupt, so we now create our own parallel government. That's wrong, because that's not a Catholic approach. And this would be fleeing from actually our task of being here in this world. God wants us to be here. We as pro-lifers say every child is wanted by God. God's will is perfect. So he wants us to be right now where we are with all our skills. But we recognize that if something leads people towards the evil, this cannot be good. So therefore, we try to find out if there are structures emerging naturally, which leads people towards good, and those structures we promote. The good doctors, the good priests, the good lawyers, the good teachers, the good family structures, the good businesses, and so on. We just promote them all the time, every day in the whole life. And I hope and I believe, and this is my vision, at the end of the day, this will be working society also strong enough to keep a government running and keep society also on a legal in a state, as to make a state work, you know. That's I think what will happen, but I think we cannot invent this. Right. We have to find it.
It's amazing that the restrictions you guys have and are and sounds like it's increasing, you know. Yeah. We complain here over here in America, but the truth is here at Crisis, I don't worry about the cop, at least not yet, the cops coming after me. What we would have is, you know, Facebook would cancel us or Twitter or something like that. But it sounds like if you guys do things the wrong way, like Pride Month, we have that here too. You know, we can say whatever we want about it and we might get canceled on social media, but we're not going to get arrested. But it sounds like you guys could get fined and arrested. Yeah. If you say the wrong thing.
Yeah, this starts and gets heavier and heavier every year. And we have a law called Verhetzung. I cannot translate it, but more or less a hate speech law, which says that if you promote hate towards groups of certain sexual interests and so on, so LGBT, whatever, then you can get fined up to so on or go to face prison up to 2 years. That's the law. So at the end of the day, the government does not use it as harshly as they could, but they increase it every year. So every year the fines and the people get punished more. So this is it's a silent way of increasing it, you know. And every time the people accept it more or less, because the government will tell them, no, we don't go after free speech, only after this particular terrorist. And then, you know, this terrorist is gone, and then the level is one step higher, and then the next guy is a terrorist, and so on. So this is very easy. It's a very communist way of handling things. If you read any book about communism, I always highly appreciate if people have read the book Archipel Gulag by Solzhenitsyn, who describes very well how everything, happened and worked out. You will find so many parallels. I live next to the communist governments. The Hungarian border is only, it's less than 100 kilometers from here. It's I can drive there within half an hour, more or less. If you talk to old Hungarians, old Polish, old Czech people and so on, and ask them, what do you think of what's happening right now? Everyone, and I'm quoting them, says to you, I know this. This was my childhood.
Wow. You know, I was going to wrap it up, but now you mentioned Hungary. I just got to bring that up now since you're so close to it. Now, it sounds like there's some good things going on in Hungary with the leadership and things. And I don't know. Honestly, I don't always believe everything I read, either good or the bad. So what's your take on like Orban and like what's, what Hungary seems to be going a different path than most of Europe. Is that true or not?
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's a huge talk right now. So I would give a small answer if you allow me. Hungary understood that the Hungarian people are more important than certain ideologies. That's what they understood. But obviously they are not as independent as one would think, unfortunately. So at the end of the day, the Hungarians do a huge work, very, very good, and very happy to have them. And I think we as Austrians should work very closely with them, but government right now would not do this because we have a leftist government, but it would be a very good idea. And some of our political people also do try to do this. But at the end of the day, if the Hungarians do not have a missionary movement, they will also lose. And this is not happening there yet. Even though I have to tell you that the Catholic communities in Hungary are growing and also becoming more traditional every month. So who knows? I definitely believe that Hungary is a fantastic country right now to be in, except the vaccine question, because in the vaccine question, they were unfortunately as terroristic as everyone else.
Yeah.
Except this question, the Hungarians are actually doing really good work, especially if it comes to the family. Politics. Family politics are really amazing there.
That's good to hear. Yeah, that's good. It sounds like there are, from what it sounds like to me in Europe, it's like there are definitely all the bad things we hear about over here, but there's a lot of good things going kind of underground that aren't as well known, but they're growing and they're happening.
Yes, they do. And believe me, you will see in a few years, if you would travel Europe, and maybe Europe is already really the dictatorship we expect it to become, then you will have an underground social life. And we are Europeans. We know how to do this because we had so many, unfortunately, so many decades where we could try out and practice for this. We have our own culture for this. We have our own songs for this. We have our own pictures and art for this. We all have this. So we just have to revive this, get it out of the basement, freshen it up a little bit. And at the end, we will survive it. But that's not our goal. Our goal is not underground. Our goal is to do whatever God wants us to do. If God wants us to do this, to move our life more to an underground social life, this could definitely be what we are going to do. But God will show us. God shows us very directly everything we did throughout the last 2 years. If we knelt down in prayer and asked God, please help us with this decision, the decisions worked out well every single time.
Yeah, I think in America, if God calls us to underground, we have no idea how to do it. We just never have had to over here. So we might get some lessons from you guys.
And what we need from you, actually. That's the reason why I said at the beginning, I really like the Americans. Also, it was not a critique that I said that the Americans, the Austrians, the Europeans do not talk too much about this. It's a matter of fact that we cannot talk too much about this as well. And you can. So the more you, yes, there are some fights which are really annoying. So for example, when this whole fight among traditionalists came up about certain theological questions, which can definitely be sorted out inside and not outside. This was very annoying, and every European traditionalist was very annoyed by this because we all said, why do you have to do this right now? It's just destroying your reputation, destroying everything you do. At the end of the day, whenever I come to the United States, it was not possible for the last 2 years, but now there is a possibility for me. Whenever I come to the United States, I'm amazed by the wonderful communities there, by the fantastic priests, by the wonderful faith, by the top great media, by lots of universities you were able to create, and so on. So I'm 100% sure that the United States, the people of the United States, the Catholics of the United States will play an important role in the fight against evil. They already play an important role in the fight against evil. That's, yeah. I'm 100% sure of that.
Yeah, God willing, hopefully we'll all continue. So one last thing I wanted to ask you, how do, just practically, the St. Boniface Institute, how does it fund itself, and how do people support the Institute?
So there are two ways of how you could how people can support us. We have, obviously you can just donate. We have a Patreon and a PayPal and a direct, you know, bank account details online. I know that it's for many Americans, it's not too attractive to fund a European organization, because why should they? It's here. So what I try to focus on is trying to get donors from Europe to fund the organization. It works out quite well. We still, obviously, as every European organization, we work with very low salaries, lots of people who work for us for free. If without this would not work. So we have lots of people who work for us because it's a good cause, and I'm very happy about this. But in general, it is possible to support us. Our work is not always visible, but whenever you come to Austria, whenever you want to come here, you will see that the work can be visible for you if you want to. It's just that we cannot make certain things visible anymore, as it is just not legal anymore.
Right.
Just imagine all the meetings we had during the lockdowns. I talk about this very often, because I would never tell the police where and who and so on, but all of them were illegal.
Yeah.
Right. All of them. We did them every week a few times.
God bless you. That's great. I mean, that's what we have to do, is just when it's the right thing to do, when God wants us to do it, we just do it. And
that's it.
And no matter what the secular governments might say. So I will put a link to the St. Boniface Institute website in the show notes, also the Twitter account, because you said you have the nice videos there.
Yeah,
I just want to mention to people the book, The Ever Ancient, Ever New. I'll put a link to that as well from Tan Publishers, the nice chapter by you in that about why younger generations are embracing traditional Catholicism.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want people to go to or find out about?
Well, the easiest thing if you want to follow our work, please subscribe to our newsletter. We do talks every now and then where I talk about the political situation from a Catholic point of view via Zoom. They are once or twice every second month. So it's not very often. We do not annoy you with with newsletters every week. We send out newsletters very rarely, not because we don't do so much, but just because I think that others do this better, and what our work can be should be straight to what we are good in. And obviously follow us on Twitter. Follow us on. We have a Telegram channel now, St. Boniface Institute Telegram channel. We have a Twitter profile, and we have an Instagram profile for people who want to be on Instagram. And I have a Twitter account as well, Alexander Chuguel, so it's just A. Chuguel, very easy to find, where I comment sometimes. Right now, I just retweeted a little bit because I had too many things to do, but whenever things happen here, I always comment on them, and you're normally, without showing off, but you're normally very well informed if you follow me on Twitter, because I know normally what's happening here especially. And the Central European point of view is a very interesting point of view, as we are in between North, South, East and West. And we are a Catholic country, so we have this Catholic approach. So who knows? Maybe this is very interesting for lots of you. And if you want to support us and want to donate to us, on our homepage you will find all the details. The main support, and I'm not kidding about this, is definitely the prayer support, as I know that there are certain situations in our fight which are really, really unpleasant. Really unpleasant. It's about, you know, if you find out that people's life got completely destroyed through whatever the political system did, and we cannot help them. Often the situation comes up. And so for this, especially, your prayers are very needed. And I'm always very thankful if people do this.
That's great. Yeah. So like I said, I'll put links to all that stuff in the show notes so people can find it. I really appreciate you being on here and telling us about it. It was very informative. It's actually, I'm much more encouraged now than I probably was before we started talking about what's going on in Europe with the Catholics there. So I'm glad that we did this. Hopefully other people who are listening are also more encouraged than they might have been before. So
yeah, you can definitely be encouraged. Believe me, I'm traveling around right now quite often because I can. The restrictions are gone. All the good communities are really growing and do very well right now. So it's difficult for them, but we exist and it's well connected and it works.
Great.
Good fruits coming out of this.
Great. Well, God bless you. God bless the work that you're doing there at St. Boniface.
thank you very much. God bless you as well. I'm very happy that I could be on the show. When I come to the United States, I will send you an email and maybe we can.
Oh, that would be great. I would love that. Okay, everybody. Until next time, God love you.